Okay, so then starting the main deity worship, then we'll start when we're waking the deities, we'll go from waking until putting them to rest. So in here, before entering the deity room, then one performs achman, offers obeisances to the spiritual master to gain his, you know, blessings that we may perform these activities. In other words, to remove the obstacles and just taking up the deity worship. Then, then outside the deity room, then before opening the doors, and in other words, this is for that pujari who is opening the doors, then one can, says here, you may chant the following verses, meditating on the Lord, awakening, and begging Him to bestow His mercy. This is not the mantras for actually waking. This is just before going in. So sav abhadra karuno bhagavan vivridha prema smitena nayanam bhuruham vijrimbhan uthaya vishvan vijayaya chano vishadam madhavya gira panayata no panayatat purusha purana. The Lord who is supreme and the oldest of all is unlimitedly merciful. I wish that He may smilingly bestow His benediction upon me by opening His lotus eyes. He can uplift the entire cosmic creation and remove our dejection by kindly speaking His directions. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.9.25. Then, Deva prapannarti hara prasaram kuru keshava avalokana danena bhuyo mam parayachuta. O Keshava, O infallible Lord, O you who remove the distress of the surrendered souls, please bestow your mercy upon me by again awarding me your transcendental glance. Jaya jaya kripa moi jagatera nat Sarva jagatera koro shubha drishtipat. All glories to the merciful Lord of the universe. O Lord, please cast your auspicious glance upon all the worlds. So this is so that we, one is that the mood has started to be set. Then after that, one goes into the deity room. So the point is before entering, there can be music play. We're going to play music. One can chant mantras, you know, parayanas, or these specific mantras here. In other words, something you begin to create a pleasant atmosphere so that when the Lord wakes up, there's the proper mood is there. Not some things should not be sudden or harsh. That is the point.
You ring the bell while chanting these prayers, Mark?
Yes, it says while ringing a bell. Because the bell is music. Whole idea is, I think it mentions 64 items.
Where one cannot sing or play an instrument, the bell is considered.
Yeah, let's see. Waking the Lord, Jagran Seva, says, waking the Lord by chanting of the Vedas, Shrutis, and other verses accompanied by musical instruments, thus offering oneself submissively to the Lord before entering the deity room for puja. Veda goshana vinadi vadyer vandi staver prabodhanam. So that means Veda goshana vinyadi means the vadyer, means playing vinas and other instruments. Like that, chanting of Vedic mantras, or, you know, the scriptures. Then chanting prayers and offering oneself, one's surrender. Staver prabodhanam. So that aspect should be there. This also then goes into the Prabhupada also brings in the point that this is not only the pujari who's going into the temple and waking the deities, that they ring the bell and say some glories of the Lord and surrender themselves, But every devotee is doing that. So whenever they come to the temple, they ring the bell, and then they say Jai, according to what's the deity's name? That's the Jaya Shabda, upon seeing the deity and offering obeisances. So that principle is followed by everyone. In other words, glorifies the Lord, one offers obeisances, and one surrenders to the Lord. You know, man mana bhava mad bhakto madhyajimam namaskuru. So that surrender to the Lord, rendering service, glorifying the Lord, that is a principle. So it manifests through the pujari before he goes in, doing these activities, and the devotee when he comes into the temple in the morning for Mangalartik or any time, seeing the deity, he says Jai, offers his obeisances and offers himself.
So these prayers would be said quite loudly and melodiously.
Yeah, ideally the prayers should be said like that. Main thing is they should be pleasant.
Mm.
And so you would want to start ringing the bell first, because that's the music.
Mm.
Then start. You wouldn't just start suddenly loud playing and all that. You know, it would be something pleasant and all that. You're not waking the Lord with this, but you're creating the proper atmosphere like that. So this is before seeing the Lord, while the other aspect of Prabodhanam is after seeing the Lord, when you come in front of Him in the temple room. Okay. Then, entering the deity room, says, before entering the deity room, draw the Lord's attention by making a sound, either by clapping your hands, ringing a bell, or knocking on the deity room door. Open the door, turn on the lights, and chant the names of the deities in a festive mood. And he gives, Jai Jai Shishi Guru Gauranga Jagannath Balade Subhadra Radha Shamasundar, whatever. Ki Jai. And then step into the deity room with your right foot first, and light the ghee or oil lamps. So here he's mentioning turn on the lights, because most are working by that principle. They have the lights. Otherwise, the tradition is if you have these lamps to light, come in carrying a lamp for lighting them, so that there's a more light, pleasant light. Then turn on those lamps and do some of the preliminaries. Then after waking the deities, then you can turn on the electric lights.
Mm.
Like that. In other words, no one likes if someone just comes and flicks a big light on in their face, because especially even if you don't have such lamps that you can light, then in the deity room there's generally different lamps. There's the big heavy-duty, 1,000-watt halogen lamps that go right in the deity's eyes that are on the altar. And then there's the ones in the room, like behind the altar, just the room in general. So better is to turn on those first, the general lights, and not the big, bright darshan lights. Then after those are on, then you wake the deities. Like that. And then when you got everything ready for darshan, then turn on the heavy lights. Because we must remember that in Golok and these places, then the Lord's pastimes, they would always be using oil lamps. Because they create a much more pleasant atmosphere, pleasant mood. Like in Dwarka, they were jeweled lamps. That doesn't mean that just the lamp was bedecked with jewels. It means that the jewels are made in such a way that you put one wick inside and it will refract through those jewels. So its light will be increased. It will create different kind of light effects. So it makes very, very pleasant light. Like sometimes they'll have a candle, like a candle, something you put on the wall or something, put candles in, it has a mirror behind it. So then you get double the light. That's the interesting thing. You have one light, because you put the mirror, you actually get two. It's not that, it's a very easy way to expand your light power with the same light. So you're entering, then you're waking the deities. While ringing a bell, your left hand approaches spiritual master's bed, touches lotus feet with your right hand. Chant, Otishta, Otishta, Sri Guru, Tyaga Nidram, Kripa Maya. O all-merciful spiritual master, please rise from sleep. Then you go to the altar I'll then move the spiritual master's shoes from the bed to the simhasan. While meditating, he is rising from bed to receive, to perform his services to the Lord and to give us an opportunity to assist. Then we will go to Nityananda Prabhu, Yudhishthira Janeshwara, Yoga Nidram, Tyaga Prabhu, Namo Hatte, Divya Nama, Su Shradhardham, Shradhartham, Yutarasi. O Nityananda Prabhu, Lord of Janava, please arise and give up your divine sleep. At the marketplace of the holy name, you distribute the divine name, asking only for one's faith in payment. Then approach Lord Chaitanya, and touching his feet, Otishto Otishto Gauranga, Jahi Nidram Mahaprabho, Shubha Drishti Pradanena Trailokya Mangalam Kuru. O Lord Gauranga, please rise from sleep and bless the three worlds with your auspicious glance. Then Jagannath Baladev and Subhadra, Tyaga Nidram Jagannatha Sri Baladev Otishtacha, Jagan Mater Chasubhadre Utishtotishta Subhadhe. O Lord Jagannath and Lord Baladev, please give up your sleep and arise. O Shrimati Subhadra, dear mother of the universe, please arise and bestow good fortune upon us. Then Radha and Krishna's bed. Then Ishwara Shri Hare Krishna Devaki Nandana Prabho Nidram Muncha Jagannatha Prabhata Samayo Bhavet. O Supreme Controller, O Lord Hari, O Krishna, O Son of Devaki, O Master, O Lord of the Universe, please give up your sleep, for daybreak has come. Go Gopa Gokulananda Yashoda Nanda Vardana Utishta Radhaya Shardam Pratar Asij Jagatpate. O Master of the Universes, O Bliss of Gokul, the cowherds and the cows, you who gladden the hearts of Yashoda and Nanda, please rise from bed with Sri Radhika, for morning has come. Then for Vishnu Tattva Didis, Utishta Utishta Govinda, Utishta Parameshwara, Utishta Kamala Akanta, Trailokya Mangalam Kuru. There's also the same thing. This is O Govinda, O Parameshwara, O beloved of Lakshmi, please rise and bestow good fortune on all the three worlds. You can also, this is also, I think, in Ramayana, given as Utishta, Utishta Govinda, Utishta Garuda Dvaja. He's a writer of Garuda. Utishta Kamala Kanta, Trailokya, Mangalam Kuru. I mean, that was what Vishwamitra chanted when he would wake up Lord Ramachandra in the morning. When Vishwamitra took him to his ashram, then when he would wake him, he would use that. Yeah, it says for other deities you can chant Utishta, Utishta Utishta, the name and the name of the deity. Now all these small deities can go back to the bed, or if there's large deities, you just by meditation from the bed you awaken them, bring them to the bed. In any case, the deity has gone to his bed to sleep. Now you bring his shoes, he comes, he sits, like that. So then any crowns, turbans, cheddars, or veils that belong to the Lord, replace any of this. Removing any remaining flowers and garlands, and that means except for Tulsi garlands. It says garlands offered the previous evening and Tulsi leaves offered the previous day may remain on the deities throughout Mangalartik the next morning. So this means garlands that were offered in the evening, means fresh garlands, from the evening before may stay, but the morning garlands you generally take off in the evening. But Tulsi garlands or Tulsi leaves can be there from the previous morning. They can go throughout. There's no problem with them staying on more time. All right? Clean the deity room and then wash your hands. Now, you can also at this time, after waking them, moving them to the altar, then before dressing them and doing all these things, putting the cheddars, veils, and all that, then one could also offer them achman, brush the teeth, clean the tongue, wash the hands and mouth, and give a cloth for drying. These. Yes, what is it? Guhyam akiti prichati. The, what do you call it? The gentle discussions between devotees exchanging their realizations, you know, revealing their minds. And Rupa Goswami says one should be straightforward in ordinary dealings. So they're following Rupa Goswami's order to the T here. Whatever they thought about the guy, they're saying, and they're being very straightforward about it. Listen.
So Maharaj, how would you do? Because it's like, if you wake the spiritual master and then you go to Lord Nityananda, Lord Chaitanya, you would then go back to the spiritual master, offer like Esa, Dantakasta, Aingulivita, Kuswig, then Achman, then...
Yeah, we could do like that.
And then to Lord Nityananda, or
yeah.
When you woke your spiritual master, would you then... At the same time, offering the two strings.
You could do. It doesn't really matter. See, the main principle is that's one of the options is washing the mouth and doing all these things at this time. That's one of the ways to do it. Otherwise, but that's more complicated. If you're, but otherwise, then one can do it after the Mangal Arati. See, it's because Krishna will get up in the morning, and then he may wash like that. But the serious cleaning and all that will be after he's gone back to Nandagaon. So it can be either done at this time or after. It doesn't matter. Each one is okay. So generally, if you're just doing a more simple puja, you know, full, but simpler, you'll just wake the deities, put them back on the altar, then like you said, just redress and, you know, make everything nice, then make the bhoga offering, you know, clean up, and then you're ready for Mangal Arati. Like that. So they'll wake, you know, dress them, clean the room, offering like that. Or you can also then, instead of doing the brushing the teeth and that after Mangal Arati, when you do the snaniyam part, you'll do it at this time. So you can either wake them individually, the deities, and then offer all these things. You know, Achman, Dantakashta, Jiwa Lekana, which means the tongue cleaner. Hasta Mukha Prakshalanam, water for cleaning the hands and mouth. Then again, Achman, you know, and then Angavastra, means a towel, you know, for drying and that afterwards. So you can do those. You can either do it like that, or wake them all up and then do it individually, like that. Or you can just leave it, and then after Mangal Arati, the individual pujaris who are going to do it will do it like that. It just depends upon how you want to do it. But this is all done with water. You'll have an Achman cup and just go through these. You won't be actually offering the items. Right? You'll just be doing it with water. You know, you just pick up the water, Idam Achmaniyam, like that. You can go through in this way. So, like that. Okay.
And Dantakasta, you would offer Achman or a flower or the actual twig.
Yeah, kind of as plant. If you have them, you can offer the twig, if not flowers, if you have abundant flowers, if not water. Because some places, especially in the West, it's very hard to get flowers. So the opulence of replacing the item with flowers kind of doesn't really work for them easily. So they
but
would.
If you hear and you're waiting, for instance, the spiritual master, you can have a neem twig.
Yeah.
Cut.
Yeah, a neem twig cut, or like in the West, you could use a eucalyptus, like Prabhupada would do. So that twig should be. It's generally about 9 inches long, and about the size of. Depends. I would say probably the little finger, like that. Because there's really heavy ones that are the size of like your middle finger. You really have to chew on them for a long time to get them ready. But the size of that. And you'll offer the part, I think that's away from the tree. The smaller end. Like that. You know, so it'll be tapered. So the smaller end is what's offered. But it shouldn't, you know, so it's about the size of the finger. So one end's a little smaller, one end's a little bit bigger. You know. Because then when you chew it, it has a bigger base. Well, if you chew the bigger end, then it's already bigger, and then when you get it chewed, then the base will be smaller, so you may lose bits and pieces. Well, if you do it the other way, you have a bigger base after you chew it. It means we don't chew it, I'm just saying why it's offered that way.
Hmm.
This is for the deities. You can let them chew their own mean twig. Right. Okay, then jihwa lekanam. Jihwa is the tongue, so ulekanam means to clean, like that. So that's the thing. In the spiritual world, Krishna, Radharani, they all also clean their tongue. That's one of the things they do in Golok Vrindavan. It's not just something they do here. The reason we do it is because they do it. The reason we brush our teeth is because they brush their teeth. Otherwise, you don't see the animals brushing their teeth, right? Like that. Of course, they do not, you know, eat anything special. They just eat some grass or something else like that. So it's not going to bother their teeth. But if you want to eat like a king, or in other words, eat like God, then you better brush your teeth. You know, otherwise your teeth will fall out. If you want to stick to eating grass and, you know, fruits off the trees, or, you know, whatever you can dig up under rocks and stones, then, you know, you don't have to worry about brushing your teeth. But if you want to, you know, eat, you know, like I would say, foodstuffs meant for humans, then you have to brush your teeth. Like that. Brush your teeth, clean the tongue. Like that. Then rinsing the mouth. Then achman is performed, because anytime you do anything like that, achman must be done. Like that. And then angavastra for drying. And after that, then when everything's ready, then you can offer tulsi or flowers to the lotus feet of the deities. And then we make the boga offering. Okay. Does he explain the boga offering here? He does. Okay. Okay, so you have different bogas, balya bogas, before Mangalartik, afternoon, vaikalika, late evening, ratrikalina, vaikalika, oh I see, yeah, these are smaller offerings, the noon offering rajbog, and the early evening. So here he gives more of a elaborate puja, how to offer, and not so elaborate. Yeah, this is not so elaborate at all. But it's a little more elaborate than many are used to. So he's saying that you can do it, it's more simple if you want on the smaller offerings. You know, before Mangalartik, before the Darshanartik, the 4 o'clock, or the late evening. You know, these different things like that. Otherwise, one can do like this, how it is here. And of course, any of these procedures we're going through, if you want to blow a gasket, then you just reach for the supplement to the volume 1. And if you think that this volume is complicated, just look at the other, and then you'll think this one's great. Okay, preliminary activities. So bring in you want to clean the place where the boga will be kept nicely. Wash your hands after doing that, because you use a cloth or something for it. You'll sprinkle water, wipe it. That cloth can be washed, and then you wash your hands like that. One must be very, very careful always about what one has touched. Like that. In other words, one has touched anything that is not clean, one has to be conscious of that. That's one of the main aspects of the deity worship, is we're trying to get from the gross to the subtle platform, right? And from that, it makes it very easy to go to the transcendental platform. It means the gross is engaged. That's the first step. But the next is the consciousness. So when we deal with the consciousness, you know, on the, you know, very pure platform, there's many subtleties that are there that we have to be able to understand the atmosphere, the moods, whatever is going on. Just like I was talking about, the rule is you come in, knock on the door, say a few prayers, go inside, flick on the lights, set up the deity room. So that's what you're doing. you've engaged your body and your senses, right? Now, the subtler aspects are that the Lord is just waking up. I wouldn't want to just flick on the halogen light right in his eyes. Therefore, I'll put on another light or light the lamps first before I even turn them on, wake them up. Then I may turn on the lights. Why? Because of the mood. You're waking the Lord. He's just getting up, you know, and you want to create a pleasant atmosphere. So the main spotlights are not a pleasant atmosphere. They're fine for the day, the darshan, everyone can see. You know, he's fully awake, he's fully relating with the devotees, but here he's sleeping with Radharani or like this, taking rest. And, you know, he's just coming, waking up, and so that moods are there. So that aspect must be seen. So these are the subtleties. So these are created, we are gross by nature. So to change that, we engage the body, we perform these rituals, but then there's also these subtleties of purity. So the subtleties of purity of the body then give rise to understanding the subtleties of purity of the mind and the subtleties of purity of the consciousness. So we can catch when impurities come there, improper moods, things like that. Because they're very subtle. The mind is very tricky. It's been, yet one must remember that the mind has got a, you know, what do you call it? You know, practically an unlimited number of years head start on us. You know, we're just starting the devotional path, but it's been practicing the material path in all 8,400,000 species of life since time immemorial. So it's quite trained, quite practiced. So just by habit, just like if there's something to eat, by habit the mind just immediately checks it out. Is this something I want to eat? You know, first it checks that out. Then afterwards, then the intelligent may go, wait a minute, is that bhoga or prasadam? Right? But the natural mind just bang, you know, what is that? Do I like it or not? First, am I hungry or not? Or here's something to eat, is it good or not? Then you check if I'm hungry or not. Then if I'm not hungry, but it's really good stuff, then okay, I can accommodate it. And if I'm not so hungry and it's not so good, then, you know, what do you call it? Discretion is the better part of valor, right? You know, you have to give yourself some credit for being, you know, quite restrained and cultured and all these. Then if you're really hungry, even if it's not something so wonderful, you know, blind uncle's better than no uncle, you know. So while all this is happening within a few nanoseconds, then the intelligence steps in and goes, hey, wait a minute, is this prasadam or bhoga? Then you check this, then you, the mind then engages the senses again to check out, well, you know, what is the situation? You know, what is the time? What is, you know, where is it? And all these different things so you can make a decision like that. So the point is the mind does these things. Just like we see, one may say, well, my mind doesn't. So then that's very good. We'll offer our obeisances because we see that even Madhavendra Puri's mind, when he heard of the offering, then he immediately said, I can taste that and find out how to cook it for the Lord. Then he thought afterwards, hey, wait a minute, I'm already talking about tasting and the Lord hasn't even eaten yet. Right? So even though it's service, and on his point there's no fault, right? There is no fault because him wanting to taste it is simply for the purpose of doing something for the deity. So it is pure, unalloyed devotional service. But the setting, the proper thing of etiquette is one thinks that the reason that I thought that up, it may have been pure devotional service, but the reason I thought it up is because I'm such a, you know, unqualified person, very lusty and very sinful. Therefore, my mind thought of it like that. Otherwise, the mind would have thought, oh, then, you know, we will, you know, at an appropriate time, then we should inquire more about this, you know? you know, or just think, yes, I should find out the recipe so I can make this for the Lord. Right? You know, and then afterwards, then you get it, then you taste, then you talk, like that. But because the mind immediately put that in, the devotee thinks it's because of my disqualification. Of course, Krishna knows that there was no disqualification. So therefore, Krishna came himself and brought that pot of kheer. He's known as Kheer Chor Gopinath. Because there was no disqualification. Just, this is the point. Is even the devotee is very qualified, he thinks he's unqualified. Like in the prayer, the songs of Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Prarthana. So giving up what's improper. We see that the devotee, even though he's very qualified, he still finds fault in himself. Because he takes it that his motives for doing it are material. Others can understand by the symptoms that it's not that. It's actually all spiritual. But the devotee himself, even if it is spiritual, he's seeing it as that his motivation is material. Does this make sense? So these kind of subtleties can be developed very nicely by good association and by following these, understanding what's going on in the deity worship, and by these principles of punctuality and cleanliness. Then the mind is actually put on the line. You know, then you actually see the laziness of the mind and these other aspects of the mind. So these subtleties are very important because then they bring about the subtleties in the deity worship. Someone who doesn't care for, you know, such fine technical things, that's all right as long as for themselves personally, they also live very simply. Their dealings with others are very simple. You know, they're not critical of others, they very easily just absorb themselves in chanting and hearing. There's nice kirtan, they're absorbed, they're prashad, they're happy to take it, they're not worried if it's fancy or not. Then someone like that, just simple worship, being the best, the top, is good. Or someone who's very simple, who can't accommodate technical things. But the more we technically get into our own lives. The mind gets very technical and very much into this and that and what this should be here and that should be there and this arrangement for myself and that arrangement for myself and this person this and that person that. And it's very fine at that. Then one can purify that, fine technical aspects of the mind by engaging them in the subtleties of deity worship. That's the point of it. So someone who says, oh, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't care for the rules, that's fine as long as that person is just chanting Hare Krishna and not caring for the rules. So that means they also don't care if they get something nice to eat or not, or if it comes regular, or have anything nice to wear, or they don't really care about their facilities as long as they can chant Hare Krishna. But if we see someone says, we chant Hare Krishna, we don't, but they're very interested in so many of these other facilities, then better we're more honest and get into a little bit more technical. Technical meaning, not necessarily the ritual, but technical meaning we understand what's going on. We should know what we're doing, why we're doing it. Then if we know why we're doing it, then some of these, like one might say, all this thing, what's this thing? Achman, Dantakasha, Jiva Lekanam, Hastamukha, all these things, why I have to do all this? You know, Prabhupada never introduced all this. But if you look at it, Krishna gets up in the morning, and in Golok Vrindavan, he brushes his teeth. And after he brushes his teeth, he cleans his tongue. Right? He first washes his mouth. You brush your teeth. You clean your tongue. Then you're going to wash your hands and mouth again. And then you're going to gargle. Right? And then you're going to dry yourself. Right? Krishna does like that. We ourselves do like that. So what's the problem in doing that for the Lord here? It's such a nice thing, very personal, right? So we're either seeing Krishna in the name, form, pastimes, qualities. So if we're just chanting Hare Krishna and the pastimes are just there and everything's happening there, or we're seeing Krishna's form and qualities at least, it's like they're not different. We chant the holy name. The qualities of Krishna just come, his form and his qualities just manifest. Then these may not be as important, because then we can just chant. But if not, this is a way of understanding that Krishna is a person. Right? You know, at first it's like, oh, I do these things, it's nice to offer them to God. But then the next step is, no, God does these things, that's why I'm doing them. Like, why does it say in the Shastra, when you get up, first thing you wash your mouth so many times? Then you brush your teeth, then you clean your tongue, then you rinse your mouth again. It's because this is the way God does it. So this is the way Krishna likes to do it. Right? Things are sitting around in your mouth all day. When you brush your teeth, some of it goes down your throat, this, that. So you want to rinse the mouth out first before you even start brushing your teeth. Then you brush your teeth, right? Rinse your mouth a little bit, then clean the tongue. Right? Why do you clean the tongue after brushing the teeth? Because when you're brushing your teeth, then so many nice things also sit on the tongue. So it's not just the stuff from the night before, but it's stuff from the night. I mean, not, it's not just the stuff that was on your tongue from the night before, but now you have the stuff that was on your teeth from the night before also settling on the tongue. So you clean the tongue afterwards. Then you rinse the mouth nicely, and then the mouth is nice and clean. Does this make sense? So first, we may not be, it's just enough that we can just go through, wake the deities, and go through these basic motions. That's enough. Because in the pastime of waking, Krishna does all these things. So even if we don't offer them, they will be offered, don't worry. We're assisting the spiritual master. The spiritual master is assisting his spiritual master. Like this is going all the way back up to the residence of Vrindavan. Mother Yashoda and all the different devotees, they're all there. All these things will be done for the deities. Just we will not be able to see them. Right? Is that understood? Now we're being offered the opportunity. So don't worry about it. If it's too complicated, don't worry about it. Just do the minimum essential points. You know, coming to the door, knocking in the door, going in, waking the deities, cleaning the place, offering the boga, doing the Mangal Artik, like that. That's the essential points. The rest of it will happen. The residents, the eternal associates of the Lord, will do these things for him. Now, if we want to now kind of like step a little closer to help take part in these more refined parts, you know, means start to get into some of the detail of the worship, then we can add these. But we should understand that that's what's happening. We're stepping more and taking part more in assisting the spiritual master in the Lord's pastimes. That's why we have to understand what we're doing. That's why we have to, it's not just ritual. Oh, you have to do this and then this and this and I can't remember the order and this and that. No, you just remember, this is how I do. And then once you memorize it and understand it, then like we said, then it'll be, oh, this is how Krishna does it. That's why we do it this way. Right? So we go through these points. So that's what's going on. It's not that we're just into more and more ritual. That's why Rupa Goswami says Niyamagraha. These rules are here, but if you're totally just into it because it's a ritual, that is also not so important. Then you just get caught up in this and then you become proud. Yes, I can do all these rituals. Others who can't, they're not very elevated. No, this just means you have a little bit more, right, the mode of goodness, but not so much necessarily happening on the emotional platform. So it's all intellect. It means you're doing it by intellect. You're not doing it with the mind. In other words, you've engaged the intellect, but you haven't engaged the mind in Krishna's service. The mind you're still keeping for yourself. Right? The intelligence is working for Krishna. Yes, I'm doing all the rituals, I'm doing them all right, but the mind is still mine. Why? Because I am proud. I am so good at this, I am special, I am unique, distinction, adoration, profit. You know, I should be getting all the maha. People should be, you know, offering me this, that, or saying I'm the best pujari, or when it comes to discussions about the deity worship, I should be the one listened to. Like that. So the mind you've kept for yourself. So one is thinking, one has projected oneself into the spiritual platform. But unfortunately, one hasn't really successfully done that. Better to just not bother with so many details, do a simpler worship, and engage the mind in thinking of Krishna. Because that's the whole point. The body's being engaged, and the idea is that the mind will become engaged. Right? And we're doing this without desire for result, for Krishna. So that means that then it becomes pure devotional service. Anya vilashita shunyam. Jnana karmadya navritam. Jnana karmadya, without jnan, oh yes, I'm so much into all these technical things, that's jnan. Or karma, I want a result from this. Right? So that's the point. One has to be careful, because even the jnanis that we see today, they're also karmis. Because they do their jnana, they speak so nice, but they expect everybody afterwards to go, wow, such nice lecture. Here, take this money. Oh, well, we will drive you to your ashram in our big fancy car. You know? They're expecting that. They want that. So they're doing their jnana for karma. They want results. Because the real jnanis are like the four kumaras. They just walk around naked. They don't care for anything. You know? Like that. Brahma is offering them a position as Prajapati. They don't want it. Couldn't care less. They just wander around the universe. They don't expect anything. Right? Sukadev. He's in the womb. He knows he's not the body. So why even bother coming out? Right? He knows he's not the body, but he's not sitting there going, why I can't do this and that? We're not the body, Prabhu. They're not saying like that. He's saying, I'm not the body, why do I even care? I just stay in the womb. Inside, outside. Doesn't matter. So one has to see when one engages the intelligence that the mind is also being engaged. Because the purpose of the intelligence, the consciousness affects the intelligence should be affecting the mind. If it's not, that's the platform of jnana. Right? So here, it's either done as a real jnani, like Sukadev in the womb, or the four kumaras. They don't exchange with anybody. They don't require the emotional platform or the sense. They don't need to really engage the senses or the mind. And if they do it just in a few little things on the platform of sadhana, they engage it just to keep the body and soul together. Or if we're expecting something, some facility, some respect, and this and that, then we're using the intelligence, but for our own purposes. So it hasn't influenced the mind and turned it to a positive thing. So it's a very subtle point. So this niyamagraha, we have to see. Because it's the same thing. If someone follows the rules and wants to get facility and respect and all that from that, or someone doesn't bother following the rules because he'd rather do something else for his respect and facilities. In other words, the mind is staying selfish, is kripana. Right? One is being the pragmatic minimalist, that we don't care for these things. And the other is being the, very technical, intellectual, like that. So the point is one has to come in between that, engage the intelligence, because Rupa Goswami says utsahan means endeavoring with intelligence, and the mind must be engaged in the Lord's service. So both, because when you have the mind, then that means you have the senses and you have the body. Right? And the intelligence, then that means you have proper discrimination. One second. You had something?
I just wanted to ask about the devotee in Chaitanya Leela. He would clip coconut for the Lord. And then on being carried into the deity, they touched the lintel above the door.
Mm.
And he said, because dust from people's feet will rise and settle on that lintel, then these would be considered unfit for offering.
Mm.
So is that the kind of, you know, finesse of sensitivity that you also talking about? It's not that, well, I mean, somebody could say, oh, gee, that's
fanatic.
I mean, how much dust is going to come off your feet? What percentage will even make it to the lintel of the door, which is, you know, 6 foot for normal hired people? So, I mean, how realistic are you being, Prabhu? But he's actually got a fine sensitivity for what's appropriate for the Supreme Person. So he's seeing it from that caring perspective.
Mm.
It's not just hair splitting or something.
Yeah.
It's a higher level.
Yeah. No, definitely. That's it. I think Lord Chaitanya gives that example. We hear this story from Lord Chaitanya that he's appreciating that this is first class worship because he's caring about the deity as a person. It's not a rule.
Right.
The rule, see, how this comes is this is a value. How you know someone's fanatic, basically, and how, when they're not, one of the things, there's many, but one of the things is that one lives one's life according to that platform of action. In other words, his platform of cleanliness is that. So he himself is very aware of these very subtle, fine points of cleanliness. Therefore, he can sense that, oh, these coconuts have cut the door and the people, the dust from the feet go up there. So that's the fineness of cleanliness that he can perceive. But the reason it's being glorified is because that's how he lives his life also. It's not that he's a slob and then for the deity that. That's why in the deity worship, this whole point of abhigamana, the first part of the Panchanga Puja, the five different limbs of the deity worship, is basically that personal cleanliness. Rising, brushing the teeth, you know, wearing clean clothes, doing achman, saying the mantras, all these different things are there so that one learns that cleanliness. These standard, it means this is how you live your life. It's not that, well, I just wash my hands, you know, before doing the puja, but, you know, other times I don't wash my hands. No, this is your value. This is proper life. Maybe in the preaching or that, you're out on the streets, things aren't ideal. You know, you can't, after going in the bathroom, wash your feet after, you know, using the toilet because, one, there's no taps, and two, you got your shoes on, you know, like that, and people would think it's really weird, you know, like that. So one may not dare. But for the preaching, it's understood. You're going into unideal circumstances and you're trying to do something. Preaching. So that higher principle, the Bhagavat Marg, then takes up whatever is weak from the Pancharatrik. We're supported by that. But when we get back to the temple or back to our home or back to the ashram, then we take off our shoes, and when we go into the bathroom, then we wash our feet. Because that's our lifestyle, that's our values. That's how we live. But out on the street, we may not do that. It's not that we prefer that. Oh, great, we go out on the street, I don't have to bother with all those fanatic rules, wash my feet after. Such a person, it'll be very difficult for them to become a good pujari. And there may be some weakness at some point in their preaching. Because they're not understanding the principle of what's happening. So they will advance, they may preach very nicely, but at some point that weakness may raise its ugly head. You know? That one standard of cleanliness. And then that may affect, as we were saying, the subtleties of being able to understand anarthas in the heart. In other words, we're able to understand the uncleanliness in our gross environment. Then we start getting into the subtleties of the gross environment, still external. You know, the achman purifying and sprinkling with prokshana and these things. But then the next thing is then the mind. You know, it's actually the purifying the mind and understanding the subtleties within the mind that are impure. So that's why this Pancharatra is a parallel track with the Bhagavat Marg. In our conditioned state, we're attached to the body and mind and the intelligence. So we have to, well, actually more the mind than the intelligence, that we have to have some way to engage what's so dear to us, in other words, the mind and senses, in the Lord's service. And the Pancharatra does that. Because if you want to follow the Bhagavat Marg purely, just sit down and chant Hare Krishna all day, you don't even have to bother begging. If you're supposed to eat, you'll eat, right? That's the law of karma. If you're supposed to get, you'll get. You don't work, you won't. So you just sit down and chant. Somebody brings something, you eat. Somebody doesn't, you fast. And when something does come, you just take a little bit, just enough to keep the body going till the next day. You don't think, oh, I haven't eaten for 3 days, now I should pack it in for 3 days. No, I just eat a normal amount. You know, Prabhupada said, a handful of khichdi. Babaji means, sit down, eat a handful of khichdi, that's it, bus, chant Hare Krishna. So if you can do that, fine. But if you find that that may be a little uncomfortable, then you need the Pancharatra. No ifs, no ands, no buts, no exceptions. You have to have the Pancharatra. Because otherwise, how are you going to engage your body and senses? And that's done through the Pancharatra. Holy name can do easily, but we cannot tolerate living on that platform. The ears are simply engaged in hearing, chanting Hare Krishna all day. No, we like to sit around and, did you hear this? And did you hear that? And, you know, the latest download from the latest lowdown from the download of the email, you know, like that. That's how we like to engage our ears. And our mouth, instead of just chanting all day, did you hear this? Did you hear that? You know. So many things like that.
I was wondering, if it is good to choose,
you can hear?
Your service regarding, like you said, in the street, doing sanyasa, you might cultivate tolerance and dealing with people, but the culture many times is lacking, the Vaishnava culture, cleanliness, where these aspects you develop more when you do pujari service. Should you choose between those two if you want, like, more developed culture?
Means the point is that the Pancharatra is simply an assistance to get us to the platform of Bhagavat Marg. That is the point. Even if we just follow Pancharatra, and our main thing is we think deity worship and this, and we're interested in Archan Siddhi or Sadhana Siddhi, like this, still it's going to come to the platform, it has to come to the platform of Bhagavat Marg. Bhagavat Marg means we're working on the platform of devotion. Right? Our main thing is chanting the holy name, hearing Bhagavatam, glorifying the Lord. So even the deity worship, we just be glorifying the Lord and just like that. So it will have to come to that platform. So the Pancharatra is simply to assist the Sankirtan mission. Culture is qualities. And this is the thing. Because we are gross and we're used to externals, therefore the culture starts with the prescribed rules. That's where we notice it. You know? We notice that there are certain things that we do with the body and senses in our activities, either alone or with others, that regulate so that there can be proper interaction between ourselves and others. Right? Proper relationships can be established. You know, proper platforms of respect and responsibility. Like that. To make a social structure function. Right? You have to have certain activities, then you have a community. Right? If you don't have certain things, you don't have community. So that's what the prescribed duties are for. But behind those, why those things work, those rules work is because there's qualities. Somebody has quality of respect for others or humility. Therefore, then you can deal with those superior to you so nicely. You can deal with those below you so nicely. You can deal with those equals as nicely. So the qualities cannot be hampered by the externals once they're established. Right? It may be harder to deal, but one can still, when it's not, it's just because one's in a place and people are rough doesn't mean that one still can't behave properly. You know? You understand? Cleanliness, there's the external, but there's the internal. We don't have material desires. We may be in a place that is dirty and full of all kinds of material allurements, but we're clean. We don't become attracted. So these are that culture is the qualities manifest. In other words, you go back to the principles. The principles are maintained, though the detail may not be able to be manifest. Right? The point is we're keeping that cleanliness and that. The detail, because it's not fit, you can't apply it. That's why when you go back to the temple and the detail can be applied, you apply it. While out on the street, you may not apply it. In both cases, the principle is maintained. In the temple, you have external and internal purity. And on the street, you have internal purity. But if one comes back to the temple and thinks, when I'm out on the street, I don't bother, and I'm preaching, and the preaching's the highest, so why should I bother with this lower stuff at the temple? That means one is only seeing a detail. One's not seeing the principle. Right? Otherwise, then the humility, the thing, because you're in the temple, Krishna likes it clean. We may like it, you know, dirty, like out on the street, and think that's the simpler thing. No, but Krishna likes his temple clean. So if you want to go into the toilet and not wash your feet and then walk all over the temple, maybe we don't mind, but Krishna sure does. Right? And unless you're doing it in great affection, you know, just due to being an avidhut, then maybe he doesn't mind. But if we're not on the avidhut platform, it's Krishna's temple. You know, he doesn't want people walking all over the place like that. Not at least in calling themselves, you know, the close servants and the main leaders who are setting the example. The preachers, the pujaris. You know, guests, okay, we may tolerate. They come in, but they don't go all over the place. They don't walk in the deity kitchen. They don't walk in the deity room. They may come in the temple room, but generally afterwards, you know, prasad serve, you clean the whole temple, and then afterwards you're back to the normal standard. So one has to be able to see that behind is qualities. That's why when you're chanting the name, first we hear the name. The mind's not really engaged. It means engaged is fixed. Like that. But the hearing is there and the mouth is there. The fingers are there. You know? Like that. Then, when we become more purified, then the form comes. Now the mind's starting to become engaged. Seriously. But the form comes. Like that. Then comes the qualities. Right? Then comes the qualities. Then when you have to form the qualities, then you have to be able to accept others. Right? So only after nadanam, najanam, nasundarim, then we can get into pastimes. Why? Because ayinandana tanuja kinkaram, I am your servant. And you're humble. Amanina maana dena. You don't desire anything. So you're not worried about you know, that people are offering things to Krishna and this and that. And I am identifying now as a servant. Therefore, now I can see the pastimes. Before that, I can't. Otherwise, somebody's going to offer something to Krishna and you're going to think, hey, I'd like that. Or why don't they offer that to me? Therefore, one is left out of that. So it comes naturally, yes.
Maharaj, you made a very interesting point about the intelligence. We may be engaging in Krishna's service, but we might be keeping the mind for ourselves.
Mm.
Because I think most devotees assume, there seems to be a common assumption, going from subtle to gross, of, you know, the intelligence being a subtler principle, that if somehow the buddhi is engaged in the service of the Lord, then it means automatically the mind, being a grosser principle, will fall into line and also be, you know, engaged or absorbed in the service of the Lord. So I think what you're explaining is showing that, yeah, you know, not of necessity it has to be this.
Yeah.
You know, it could be, your intelligence can be engaged and you could still emotionally and mentally be preserving some of the mind, accepting and rejecting business
for ourselves. Yeah, that's a,
so there seems to be a very common misconception of devotees, yeah, that, oh, if my intelligence is engaged, then automatically my mind.
Yeah, because the point is intelligence can be engaged where the intelligence is in control of the mind. Or it can be that the intelligence is being controlled, I mean, is controlled by the mind. Either the mind is in control, the intelligence is in control of the mind, or the mind's in control of the intelligence.
Hmm.
It appears to be raining. Maybe we should go inside. So, like, what you see, what happens is if the intelligence is in control, then the mind goes through its normal accepting and rejecting thing, but then the intelligence always points out what is the actual proper thing to do.
Hmm.
And because the intelligence is control, one does the proper thing. But now if the mind is in control, it will use the intelligence to figure out better ways to get, you know, something better for accepting and rejecting. I want this, but now what's the best way to get it?
Hmm.
So maybe the intelligence can be used by the mind. So one has to be very, very careful. When we see the proper balance is there, also see if we just situate in the intelligent platform, but the mind is also not properly engaged, and we don't see the actual purpose or importance of prescribed duties, then you get the thing of, like, when Prabhupada is explaining something to somebody and they don't understand, then he says, just try to understand. And he explains it again.
Hmm.
And they don't. Just try to understand. So at least if the person is proper desire, like that, then he'll say in that way. You know?
So that endeavor would actually come from the intelligence.
Yeah.
That attempting to understand.
Yeah, the attempting. That's there. But you see that the emotional platform is still there when Prabhupada, just try to understand.
Hmm.
Means he's trying to benefit you. He's not showing his prowess, his intellectual prowess. You don't understand. You're a nitwit.
Hmm.
You know? Because otherwise we generally find that is art. We explain it. Someone doesn't understand. Just say, you stupid or something.
Hmm.
You know? Because we think we're very intelligent. But here, we see Prabhupada is saying, this is what the acharyas say.
Hmm.
If you understand this, you will be benefited. It is my service to my spiritual master to help. I want to help you. So now try to understand this. If you don't understand, you'll explain it again. And as long as the ego and all those things don't get in the way, then probably be very gentle. But if one becomes proud and thinks, yes, I'm so intelligent, then he may have to smash that intelligence to create the humility so that you can understand. Because if there's pride, no more knowledge goes inside. If there's humility, then you can absorb knowledge.
So Maharaj, when in Shastra they speak about the kind of conflict between one's higher nature and lower nature,
yeah,
what falls into which category? Lower nature would be like the senses and body.
It would also be the mind.
Hmm.
It just depends upon the higher nature means to serve Krishna.
Hmm.
The lower nature means to serve one's own ends. So that may mean that, so it's like if the consciousness is higher, then you can properly engage the intelligence, the mind, the senses. in the Lord's service. So that's the higher nature. Hmm. And lower nature means you do it for yourself. Even though, because he's saying the higher nature should prevail.
Hmm.
That, and Krishna we see is kicked out karma and jnan. So that means people who are qualified to go to the heavenly planets become demigods, become controllers of the directions, or even Lord Brahma. That's all being kicked out. And that's very refined.
Hmm.
So one has to understand that the lower nature can be so much more refined and higher class and intelligent than anything we've ever come across.
Hmm.
So when one performs one's activities for Krishna, that is the higher nature. One performs the exact same activity, but not for Krishna, that's the lower nature.
Hmm.
So one can even follow very proper things, but not for Krishna, then it's useless. That's why Krishna makes the point, do the duties for Him. Right? Anyavilashita shunyam jnana karna jnana
karmadi
anavritam. Then?
Anukulyena
Krishnanu shilanam. Anukul means should be favorable. The service should be favorable. Anushilanam. What does that shilanam mean?
Practice.
Also, should be practiced. So it must become habit. So practice is there. So this is Rupa Goswami. So this whole idea will just jump to an advanced thing, like the Sahajiyas say. Bogus. It's not supporting followers. They're not followers of Rupa Goswami. You know, the only thing that they could maybe say they're kind of following is that they wear some short cloth and this and that. The only difference, they didn't pick it up off the road. They, you know, they bought it in Loy Bazaar or something, you know. Like that. So, you said that?
No.
We're still on your... Yeah, so that's that point of that, it's devotional service. An activity. Why would he say jnana karmadhyanavritam? Why would he say without karma and jnana? You say devotional service doesn't have any karma and jnana in it. So why does he say that? That means you, the activity can be performed with karma and jnana. Right? It means that you're doing it for the purpose of simply knowledge. Or just, I'm not this body and, you know, I'm God. Or you want some benefit from it. So the whole point is that's why Krishna keeps putting these... This is what is the confusing point about the devotional path. I mean, do we just say, chant Hare Krishna, be happy, take prasad, dance, do a little preaching, everyone can understand. But if you can act on that platform, right? Krishna says, if you can't surrender fully, do sadhana bhakti. So if you act on that platform, fine. You don't need any varnashram for that. Everyone who comes just chants Hare Krishna and preaches, takes prasad. That's it. Right? A little deity worship, a little this, that's all. Nothing else. And one's happy, one's satisfied. One's all one's spiritual and emotional and sensual needs are taken care of by that. One's association with the devotees, the taking prasad, you know, you're sleeping simply and dressing simply, you're satisfied. Everyone can understand that platform. But we may find we cannot act on that platform. So therefore you have to go to the next platform, which is work for Krishna. That means you take your specific conditioned nature and engage it according to one of the four varnas and one of the four ashrams in Krishna's service. Right? So now, those principles of varnashram we see can be used by materialists for karma and jnana. Because the Krishna has set up the universe. He says how he's the boss. He sets the rules. But now you can use those rules for karma and jnana. Or you can use them for bhakti. So that's the point. It's the same when you come to that third platform. It's the same platform that's common with the karmis and jnanis on just social dealings and activities. That's why Krishna comes and says, therefore I come and do prescribed duties. There's no prescribed duties for me. I make the prescribed duties. Prescribed duties are Krishna's rules. So there's no rules that Krishna has to follow. But Krishna says, I come and do them. I come as a Vaishya and do those. I come as a Kshatriya and do those activities. Lord Chaitanya comes as a Brahmin. Right? So he does those prescribed duties. We see he goes through, as he deals as a young brahmachari in the house, or just living in the house. He goes to the Gurukul. He lives as a grihastha. You know, as Lord Chaitanya takes sannyas. He does these things. Why? So that we can follow the example. So these rules must be those that are there. So they're common. This is where the difficulty comes. The same rules are the same for everybody. You want to get into social things other than just around the temple, around the deity, and around the preaching. You want to expand beyond that and bring in the ashrams and the varnas and all that, because we have to engage our nature. Then we have to understand those same rules also apply for the karmas and jnanis. Therefore, jnana, karmadya navritam, without these things. You do these things, but not like the karmis do for material benefit, or the jnanis do for their benefits. That you do for bhakti. You understand?
Maybe it's a doubt or something. It's a little like, I don't know what to say. There are many times when he quotes the sloka, he says, anavritam means covered over. So then he explains it like, bhakti should not be covered over by jnana and karma. But it doesn't mean that it cannot be assisted by jnana and karma. He explains many times like that.
Jnana and karma means activities. The third and fifth chapters are all about karma yoga. It means you've got to engage the body and the senses in the Lord's service. One has to understand is what's happening here is that there's a path. Krishna says there's one path. Ye yatamam prapadyam te tamstataiva bhajamyaham. Mama vartmanu vartante manusha sarva parta. Partha sarvasaha. That it's one path. It's not another path. So that path means wherever you are, means, you know, one end is hell, the other end is Krishna. So from hell up, wherever you're situated, the purpose of that path is to go to Krishna. Now, if you have Krishna as the goal, you take devotional service as the process. Right? You understand your relationship as servant of Krishna, and you're supposed to serve. Then, wherever you are, that becomes devotional service, going back to Krishna. Now, if you take that path, wherever you are, and use it for your own benefit, then it's either karma, jnana, yoga, or just, you know, nonsense activities. You understand? That's the whole thing. You understand the total process. Then wherever you're situated means if you're totally grossly in the bodily concept of life, you know, you don't even know that things like mind and intelligence exist. So you just engage the body. And then as you wake up to these other things, you start engaging them. But so that's why it's called karma yoga, jnana yoga, because it's devotional service through the medium of karma, devotional service through the medium of jnana. But it's devotional service. That is the point. But if you take out the devotional service, it's just karma and it's just jnana. You know? So we're talking about you're actually working, working within karma and jnana, engaging it. We're talking about the rules given by Krishna, the Varnashram system. That gives the most purified and closest system to the transcendental that you can engage, because we have a material body, we have to engage it. So we engage them through the Varnashram, right? But that is only to support the higher principle of the sadhana, and that is only there for the higher principle of surrender to Krishna. You know, the Prabodhanam. That's the first thing of the 64. It just starts off. Surrender. right? Krishna says, you surrender, then we talk. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja. Then, aham tuam sarva papibho. You surrender, then I protect. So with the 64 items, what's the first thing? Prabodhanam. You surrender. Then we can talk about the other 63. There's no prabodhanam, don't even bother talking about it. So it's a very subtle point that you have the same thing, it can be used in many different ways. Because it's Krishna's. Krishna says he is the mantra, he is the offering, he is the ritual, you know, he is the person offering, he's the fire. All these things he says. So the point is now you can use for Krishna, or you can use something for not for Krishna. Right? So Krishna's system that Krishna has given is the best. Of course, Krishna has also given the other. It's a reflection. But it's not direct. You know, one can act like an animal, like we were just reading, not the Kinnaras. Who's that group? Hanuman and all them, and Kimpurushas, that's it. The Kimpurushas, they're not civilized humans as such. They have their own simple language, they live out in the, you know, forest. They're like sophisticated, high class animals. But they're called Vanaras. But because they have come in contact with the Lord and his pure devotees, you know, because they're all following Hanuman. Therefore, they've attained the topmost platform, and the Lord sees them as his friends, his intimate associates. So it is possible, without Varna Ashram, to just come like that, due to devotion. But they had such strong association with the pure devotee, and they are accepting who they are. See, this is a very important difference. One can say, see, you don't have to follow all this varnasha, but they're not proud. They say, we are a bunch of pack of animals. We don't know how to talk. We're unsophisticated, low class, low birth. And despite that, we are being accepted by the Lord. They're not saying, you know, what's the problem? You know? Like that. They're not proud of their Western births and their Western languages and their Western culture and their Western, you know, Loma Linda hamburgers and Western pizza and their Western pants and funny shirts and shoes and Western furnitures and Western bathrooms without facility to wash their feet. They're not proud of all. If one becomes proud of this, then one... Don't fool yourself that one can be very advanced in devotional service. Because Kapila Muni says in the Bhagavatam, says that one who is proud of these things, one's birth, one's intelligence, one's abilities, he's in the mode of ignorance. It's devotional service. He's a devotee. But his devotional service is covered by ignorance. So we're not even here talking. Rupa Goswami is that which is covered by jnana and karma. He doesn't even mention ignorance. Right? Jnana means attached to the mode of goodness. Right? Peaceful, you know, don't want any anxieties, you know. Big management or big preaching's anxiety, I don't want it. You know? Like that, or just attached to your books. You know, dragging them around like a donkey. You know? And karma is that you're attached to material results. You do your worship, you do your whatever it is, your duties, but you want some results for it. You do your preaching, you want results. You want to hear your name in the morning being said. You want to hear your names first. You want a result from it. He doesn't even bother mentioning ignorance of pride. I mean, any gentleman just knows that's just so low class. No one in the Vedic culture would even accept such a person as cultured. Right? Like we see, in the Vedic literature. Who is proud? Always comes along and is proud and makes plenty of trouble. You know? But he's big Rishi and big Muni and all this kind of thing. Right? Gets himself in so much trouble in the Bhagavatam. You know? Always makes trouble. Durvasa. But he's known. He's the incarnation of mode of ignorance. He's always getting angry. Always getting upset. Always some prestige. Right? The whole thing with Ambarish is a prestige. He drank water before I came back. How can he do this? I'm the sage. He's just a lowly king. Like that. It's all ignorance. Therefore, no one really closely associates with him. And that's what Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments on this verse of Bhagavatam. He says, such a devotee who is proud of all these things, then their intelligence, you know, their abilities, all these different things, their material qualifications, such a devotee we should respect, but we should not associate with. You know, it means intimately associating with. We should not associate. We respect. We're always nice. That's culture. Is that if we're humble, they're better than us. But they are not setting that example and platform that we can get some benefit from. Therefore, I avoid their association. Right? Maybe if I was more qualified, I'd see something good, but whatever I can't, I avoid. It's out of humility, not because of pride. Therefore, they take association of those who are more advanced, who are actually situated properly. So this ignorance is kicked out. So this not following the Vedic culture out of pride, that doesn't even count as even a consideration. Rupa Goswami is saying, you may be considering performing devotional service mixed with karma and jnana, but we throw that out. He doesn't even bring it up as a possibility, you know, devotional service mixed with ignorance. You know, it doesn't even necessarily have to come into the realm of prescribed duties. But passion and goodness must. So karma and jnana means following prescribed duties. You may be ignorant, and you may not be following the other point is it's a mentality. We're talking about the gross manifestation. But the mentality is there. So if the mentality is karma and jnana, even if it's not Vedic, still it's karma and jnana. But now it may be Western karma and jnana. Like that. So one has to be very, very careful in this. And that point is that central point is our duties. And so Krishna gives all these duties. And we're talking about just the ones that Prabhupada and the Acharyas give us. We're not talking about the unlimited ocean of that is there for those who are specifically interested in karma and jnana. We're not talking about all that. We're talking about just the essential points out of there that if you follow, you can hold together a human society, a human social structure, relate with each other, perform activities according to our conditioned nature, do it for Krishna without attachment, and go back to Godhead. Right? That's why it's called devotional service. Right? Karma yoga, action in Krishna consciousness. Right? Because if it's done for Krishna, it is devotion. And if we study the shastras and try to get a deep understanding and all that, it is devotional service. Like that. So that's the whole point. It's non-different. One may say, well, it's the shastra. You mean reading Bhagavatam as jnana? Well, the karmis, the jnanis, they read these things. Shankaracharya, they all read these things. Right? The followers of Shankara, when they read these things, they come up with a totally different idea. So they're using the same book, using it for karma. Right? You have these big Bhagavat Saptas. Right? The guys that are sitting there and the guys that come and listen to it, they're all interested in karma. They all want a result. Or you go to Varanasi, then they're sitting around and then they're discussing the Shastras. They want jnana. Right? We're rejecting those ones where people doubt it. Oh, well, we don't need to follow all this stuff and this and that, and you know, where they have serious doubts about the Bhagavatam. That's an ignorance. That's not even considered. We're talking about those who have faith in the scriptures, faith in the activities given to us by Krishna in the Vedic culture. Then it's you're rejecting goodness and passion. Ignorance means you don't know what to do, what not to do. Right? As your Prabhupada said, Prabhupada mentioned that one devotee, it was about when he was talking about the moon in the fifth canto. And that devotee doubted. So Prabhupada made the point. He says, I can understand he may doubt me saying it. Well, who am I? Right? But how can he doubt the scriptures? Right? How can he doubt what Vedavyasa and the Acharyas have said? That Prabhupada said he couldn't understand. Scriptures say like that? It's true. Maybe we don't understand. But we first accept it as true. Then we try to get a deeper understanding, so we put it together. Right? We see this in the Gita. Arjuna is asking questions. He doesn't say, oh, this is nonsense, Krishna. You said this, then you said that, and all these things. It doesn't make any sense, so I think maybe, you know, why don't you try again, you know? No. He says, Krishna, you've said this, you said that. I have faith in it, but I don't understand it because it seems to be different. Please explain it. That's why devotional life starts with Shraddha. So if we don't have Shraddha, then we won't get far. Then we can't have, from that next comes Sadhu Sangha, then Bhajana Kriya. We don't have the faith, we can't associate with devotees, and we can't perform the devotional activities very strongly. So that means reading Bhagavatam and all these things. We cannot do. Faith must be there. So, yes.
Well, there was this one letter from some followers of Siddha Sarup. They wrote to Prabhupada and they said, I think it was either Nanda Maharaj or Upananda had something like 5 billion bodyguards. So they said to Prabhupada, how is it possible?
Ugrasena had 10 trillion.
Right, and he said the total population of the planet is 5 billion. So how can this be? So Prabhupada wrote back that this is in the Vedic literatures and in Shraddha. Then these boys wrote back and said, yes, but we have to present this to scientists. We're preaching to scientists. They will be skeptical. Prabhupada said, no, you are skeptical. Therefore, you don't preach. You cannot have faith in these things. Therefore, you should not preach. You're not qualified to go out and represent me.
Mm.
The Prabhupada was very heavy. Like, he just said, no, you are skeptical, not the scientists.
Yeah, that's very nice. That's a very nice point. So if we're convinced, then we can do it. So that Shraddha must be there. Therefore, we have to have faith in what Krishna is saying, what Prabhupada is saying, like that. Then we see it works. The duties in the Pancharatra, the duties of the Varnashram, you know, these are basically, they're practically non-different. Because these principles of the Pancharatra are worked into, because it's the next level, just like in sadhana bhakti, the principle of full surrender to the Lord, which is the first principle, is worked in. So whatever you're doing, it's all connected back to that point. Right? All the Vedic literatures go back to always remember Krishna, never forget. Then that expands out into the things for sadhana, which are based on that. Then we see, then is the Varnashram. And that sadhana is also worked into that. Because in Varnashram means sadhana bhakti, you get up before the sun comes up. take your bath, all that. In Varnashram, it's exactly the same. So at least the Brahmins, the Kshatriyas, they do like that. It means it's mentioning in the battlefield. Battlefield Kurukshetra. Yudhishthir gets up in the morning. This is what he does before the battle happens, right? He gets up and they wake him up with all the drums and bugles and dancers and chanters and all that. Then he wakes up. He goes, he puts on something like this and gets ready, takes his bath, puts on fine, you know, silks and all that. Then he sits down, he does the morning yajna, right? The Brahmins come, they perform the yajna, he sits there. Then afterwards he gives in charity to all the Brahmins and all that. Then I think he sees people, you know, concerning daily activities. Then he starts to prepare for the war. So before he's even thought one moment about the war, he's already got up, performed his sadhana, his bathing, his yajnas, his giving in charity, and all these different things he's already done. So the sadhana is right there in that. The difference is you don't keep doing that all day like you would just in sadhana. Then it breaks into your prescribed duties. Just like for us, we get up in the morning, doesn't matter what one's varna or ashram is, you get up in the morning and you have the whole morning program. So you get up early and until 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, you're engaged in sadhana. Right? Then after 10 o'clock, then everybody according to their varnas and ashrams performs duties. And then again in the evening, then Prabhupada arranged that one again there's a temple program or there should be something in the house where again you come back, there's kirtan, reading of Gita, Bhagavatam, taking prasad, associating with devotees. So that means for us, varnashram simply means what one does from, you know, 10 to 5 or 6 in the evening, and that's it. And then after that, it's sadhana. Before that, after that. That's all. Then Krishna mentions, yes, the fourth step. So this is the third step. The first step is full surrender. You just start performing pure unalloyed devotional service from right now. If you can't do that, then sadhana bhakti. That means you get up in the morning, the whole day you just do sadhana bhakti and go to sleep at night. Then if you can't do that, work for me. So you do your sadhana in your morning, then during the middle of the day and or you know late afternoon or early evening, then you perform varnashram duties, right? Working for Krishna according to your nature. And then the evening again, it goes back to devotional activities. Then Krishna gives a fourth option. If you can't do that, then do your swadharma, but give the result. That means you get up in the morning thinking your business, all day you're doing your business, you're going to bed at night thinking business, but you give the result to Krishna. So sadhana becomes very weak at that point. So basically, Prabhupada's recommending we stay within those first three. And for those who live outside and just want to be independent and do their own thing, okay, but give some of the results. Best is all, but at least some. Because Krishna says, give the result. He doesn't give some result or a little. He says, give the result. And Prabhupada in the purport says, if you can't give the result, then give something. Like that. So this is what is being offered. This is what is being offered. So we have to understand how this flows into each other. Then we can understand how this Pancharatra fits in with the Bhagavad. Right? Because basically the Bhagavat Marg, in its pure form, is the platform of surrender, full surrender. Pure Bhagavat Marg starts at Bhava. But it has its aspects in sadhana. Right? The chanting of the holy name, the distributing of the holy name, hearing of the Srimad Bhagavatam and the association of devotees. Like that, that's there. So it's still within sadhana.
for us. But that's supported. If we can just do that, fine. But if we can't, then we have to next add in the Pancharatra. And that then gives us the worship of the deity, and it's still sadhana. But now you bring in more of the ritualistic aspects, because that engages all our senses and mind and everything. Then, if you need, you add varnashram. But the duties will be fairly similar. That's the thing. Now, how you use those duties, that makes it devotional service, or that makes it karma, or jnana. And that's prescribed duties. And if you're not doing prescribed duties, it doesn't even count within human activity. Yes?
At what point does this, if someone is performing pure sadhana, not a second platform, what level of purity does that take? And there's no karma and jnana in that person's mentality? Or
is it basically, I mean, it's always a touch. Must be, otherwise we wouldn't be in the material world. But we're endeavoring for it. That's why it says Krishna Anyavila Chita Shun Anyavila Sita. The Sita means endeavoring for this. Otherwise it would just say Anyavilas. Anyavilas. No mix. Anyavila Sita means endeavoring for unmixed devotional service. That's sadhana. Otherwise, if there was no mix, it wouldn't be sadhana, it'd be bhava. Then you'd be on the platform of bhava. Not prema. Prema means you have to have love, but you'd be performing transcendental activities in the spiritual realm. That's bhava. Right? Means you're performing, you're still being tested, you're still developing your love for Krishna, but now you're not performing any activities here, you're performing them in the spiritual realm. Right? Bhava means you've entered into the transcendental pastimes of the Lord. It goes by past, just you are able to appreciate the pastimes and see the pastimes, but you're able to go into those pastimes and render service. You're qualified. You're invited. You don't just show up. And that's what the sahajiyas do. They think they show up at the party. No, you have to be invited to this party. Like that. You know, and there's a strict dress code. You've got to come in your transcendental surup. Right?
So the difference in level of purity between the second level and the third, what's the difference in the consciousness of those, the two types of, between someone doing duties and someone...
It just means that one has to engage more one's nature. And this can be, there can be quite a large, a broad spectrum of that between the point of sadhana and doing your own work. Means you fully identify with that. I am a Brahmin, I am a Kshatriya, I am... No. Working for Krishna means I'm a devotee, but I see that I have this conditioning of Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, of Grihastha, Brahmacharya, Vanaprastha, Sannyasa. I have these conditionings. So I understand that. I just pick it. I take the prescribed duties for that. I just do it. Right? It's just like going into the kitchen. Now I'm going to cook. Right? And I decide, well, I'm going to cook khichdi, right? So now I look around in the kitchen and all I find is some, you know, wheat flour and some potatoes. So now I really have to be stubborn, proud, and foolish to say I'm going to cook khichdi. You know? I'm not this body, Prabhu, I'm going to cook khichdi. You know? We don't care for these rules, we chant Hare Krishna. You know, Prabhupada didn't do like that. You have white flour that you can make chapatis, and you have potatoes that you can make a sabji. Or maybe you can put them inside and you can get an aloo paratha. But you're not going to get khichdi. That's just the way it is. So an intelligent person goes in there, thinks, I'm going to cook, what do I got? I cook that. And when you bring out the aloo paratha, you don't tell somebody, yes, here, have some nice khichdi. They'll look at you and go, are you crazy or something? This is a paratha. No, no, you know, this is prabhu. What do you mean? This is khichdi. It's mixed, you know, see? It's mixed. The aloo is inside the thing. It's mixed, it's khichdi. No, khichdi means you have rice and dal and sabji. Or at least rice and dal. You know, there's no subject. So that's the point. You look at yourself and you see, do I situate myself as a celibate? And if I do, am I still studying? Am I detached? Am I renounced? And if not, then a grihastha. And what is my nature? Am I able to fully engage myself and maintain myself by brahminical activities? Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. I have to see that. And then whatever it is, just take it and run with it. Because it's being done for Krishna. It doesn't matter. Though, because it's a social structure, there is etiquette, there is respect, there is proper dealings. So therefore, one situation may respect the others. The brahmacharis may be respecting the grihastas are respecting the vanaprastas and sannyasis, and the vanaprastas respecting the sannyasis. You know? The general devotees are respecting those who are leading. Within those leaders and those who are, you know, doing the economic development, respect those who can oversee the whole thing and create a situation in which they can perform those things. And then those persons who can oversee the social structure, they respect those who can give them guidance on that. You know, who can train them both in material and spiritually. So respect is there, otherwise you can't function. And everyone just takes whatever they are, but you cannot think, this is me. The problem is we think, I am the doer. Mm-hmm. Therefore, I don't want to be a Shudra, I want to be a Brahmin. Because I'm the doer. But even someone's a Brahmin, they're doing puja, they're giving lecture, they're doing nice things. They're not doing that. As soon as they think they're doing that, Krishna will then play some trick on them. Arjuna is very proud. I've defeated everybody on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. Then Krishna thought, let's have some fun. Right? So after Krishna's disappearance, then he's taking all the queens to Hastinapur. And a bunch of cowherd men with sticks come out. He's on his chariot with his astras, all the demigods have given him. He's defeated everyone with it. He can't even defeat some cowherd men that come out with sticks and just laughing walk off with the ladies. Then he understood, yes, it is Krishna who has given us this power. And now Krishna has taken it. And then Yudhishthira said, yes, now it is time for us to go. Krishna has wound up his pastimes. Now he's removed that Shakti from us. So now we're intelligent. If we're proud, we'll think, no, I will reestablish myself. No, he thinks, no, now it's time to go. And so they install Pariksit Maharaj on the throne. He was 16, so he's old enough now. And then they leave for the forest. That's why it's called the Pandavas retire timely. That is what we learn from this chapter. They've just spent how long? Means Pariksit was in the womb during the battlefield of Kurukshetra. The Pandavas leave when he's 16 for the forest. That means they've just spent, you know, basically, you know, over 100-some-odd years just being harassed by Duryodhana and being thrown out of their kingdom and spent, you know, 14 years in the forest and all that. And then they become emperors and then they leave it after 16 years. The Pandavas retire timely. Because they saw, this is what Krishna wants. This is the situation. This is what's going on. So we look at ourselves, we see, do I fit? How do I fit? And then just do it. What does it matter? Like that. And then if everybody can have this mentality, it works very nicely. Otherwise, who have the mentality, they'll get the benefit. It may be rough, but they'll benefit. Krishna sees. It's one of the rules in Manu Samhita. Don't worry about someone else. They're not following things and they're getting away with it and seemingly enjoying themselves. It says, don't worry. With time, they'll change. So the point is we do what we're supposed to do. Right? Prabhupada says this whole mission is successful if one person goes back to Godhead. So that they're willing to say that, that means that there's a lot of persons who could not go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Right? Mm. But still, the devotees from the spiritual realm and Krishna will consider it a success. One person can. They're willing to put in unlimited endeavor to get one person. But Lord Chaitanya is so merciful, so many can go. No limit can go. But that is the point. Don't worry. Don't worry. You just do your duties. Don't care if others don't care. Yes?
Some shastras, when they speak about bhakti, they don't mention the word bhakti, but they will mention vidya. So what is the connection between bhakti and vidya? Is
it That's why it's called gyan? Bhakti vidya. No, it's not mixed with gyan. It's called buddhi yoga. The yoga of intelligence. That you engage. By intelligence, you know, I should do this, and you do it. And you don't worry about the dictates of the mind and the senses. Like that. So it's called that, buddhi yoga. It means all these terms are there so that it can be hidden. So the people on lower platforms can take it and think that their lower platform is something special. Like that. Therefore, all these different levels of development means the natural development of the living entity is hidden with these terms. So that those who are not sincere just leave devotional service alone. But those who get the association of the pure Vaishnavas, then they reveal to them that here, this means this, this means this. When you read this, this means this. Vidya means knowledge about Krishna. Sambandha Gyan. Knowledge about devotional service. That's vidya. Everything else is avidya. You know? Activity. Those activities are in connection with Krishna. That's karma yoga. Everything else is just karma. Or just nonsense. Right? Knowledge is connected to Krishna. That knowledge is not. It's just gyan. Useless. Therefore, all of these different material branches of knowledge, either Vedic or non-Vedic, you use them in Krishna's service, they elevate you. You don't use them in Krishna's service, they take you to hell. Pride means it takes you to hell. So if you don't use it in Krishna's service, then it's due to our ego. We're not identifying as service to, as we're not identifying as servants of Krishna. Therefore, we have problems. Is that? Something more?
Maharaj Prabhupada said in one place, he was saying how pride keeps you out of the true, like, devotional fold.
Mm.
And Prabhupada said the hardest pride of all to give up is the pride of renunciation.
Pride of renunciation?
Mm.
Yeah. Because then you think you're better. You've given up. You've detached yourself. Mm. You think you're very elevated. So that's the point, is it doesn't, as a social structure, we respect those orders and varnas that are less detached, more detached, and who are working more on the principles rather than the details. We respect that, because that creates the structure. It functions that way. Because Krishna is the most detached, you know, most intelligent, most beautiful, most powerful, most wealthy. You know, he's the oldest. So even the Shudras thing of age, Krishna is the oldest. The thing of fame, Krishna is the most famous. You know, the Vaishya's wealth, Krishna has all wealth. The Kshatriya's influence and power, Krishna is the most powerful. The Brahmin's knowledge, you know, has there. The women's beauty, he has all that. So everything goes back to there. So if you can connect it, then it's very good. So there is a order of that. Because our idea is to get out of here. So you get out of here when you're detached from the material world and detached from Krishna. But if you're detached from the material world but not attached to Krishna, that's very dangerous. Because then you think that you're something special. And it's very difficult to change your mind. Because the gross materialist, he may have a lot of wealth and facilities and sense gratification, but a little something goes wrong and immediately he gets bewildered. Like that, like Chitraketu. 10 million wives. Totally fixed on having a son. Then the son, he has the son. How happy this man will be. You can imagine. He marries 10,000 women because the previous one couldn't give him a son. So you can imagine, after trying to have a son with 10,000 women, that means you have to have palaces for them, you have to maintain them, you have to do all the dealings and all that. You know, what a management. I mean, you've got 10 million wives, that's bigger than most countries are these days. You know, and that's just your wives. And then they have their maid servants, they have all the different things that have to run that. You know, you're talking about hundreds of millions of people. That's just to run your family. And he's willing to do that because he's so fixed on having a son. Because then the kingdom goes down. The family tradition goes down. Continues. Right? So that's what he wants. So you can imagine the anxiety he has, and then you can imagine the happiness when he has a son. You know? How happy he is materially. Then, you know, his, what is it? 999,000 otherwise poison him. So you can imagine then what anxiety is there again. And that just totally devastates him. And he's finished with material life. Right? While Durvasa runs into all these problems, you never hear of him surrendering, becoming a pure devotee. Because he's proud of his detachment, his 60,000 disciples, and his knowledge, and his mystic powers, and all these different things. So he never surrenders. Because of that pride of renunciation. So that's very important, that attachment and that pride of our detachment.
Raj, what's the proper utility of pride for a devotee? I mean,
I've heard this, you know, we're proud of, you know, our acharyas. You know, we're proud of the heritage, the culture, but it's nothing to do with us. You know, normally the pride is us, but no, but they're so kind, they picked us up and allowed us to be part of this. At one point probably mentioned about proud to be a devotee, but it was kind of like, it's not a proud that I'm special. You know, it's just an identification that we're devotees, and you know, like that. And I think one of the you got either Hanuman or Bhima or someone engaged that pride in Krishna's service. You know, it's just part of the pastime. It's adds some flavor. But it's not a prominent feature. The prominent quality is always that surrender to Krishna. But basically the point is ego means identity. So false ego manifests generally as pride. proper ego manifests as servant of Krishna, so it's humility. It's just the opposite.
Mm.
So the ego is engaged in Krishna's service by becoming the servant of the servant of the servant. Naham vipro na cha narapati. I'm none of these things. Gopi bhartu padakamala or dasa dasa anata. I'm servant of the servant. That's real ego. And the false ego thinks I'm the body, the mind, the intelligence, the senses, and then one's proud of those things.
Mm.
If one's not proud, one goes crazy. Because you're either proud and confident and well-adjusted, or you're total mental wreck because you just are unconfident and think you're useless and, you know, insecure and all these kinds of things. And then you have great difficulty. Ignorance then takes over there. You know? Then it's very, very difficult for oneself. One can't function. So therefore, the solution is, you know, one's as bad as the other. But the point is that to engage oneself as Krishna's servant, that creates real humility. So we're not proud of our own abilities. We know it's Krishna's the ability. But we don't also think that I'm a useless, means like I'm able to, on my own strength, be useless.
Mm.
Right? That's still, there's a pride there. Right? To say I'm the most useless, when there's a pride there that I am able to, by my own endeavor, become the most useless.
One boy said to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, I am the most fallen." Prabhupada said, "You're not the most anything."
Yeah. That's right. So it is by Krishna's grace that you have the ability to be such a useless. Right? So through the modes of nature. The modes make us either something very materially wonderful or materially useless. Like that. But it's not us.
You're still not the doer.
Yeah, we're still not the doer. So better to be under Krishna's direction and act according to his direction, his, what he wants.
You're talking about this being detached from the material world and not attached to Krishna.
Yeah.
Is there any similarity between that and being, you say, engaging the intelligence and Krishna service but not the mind?
Yeah, it's very similar. But one can be attached to Krishna, and you know, but at the same time as just working on the intellectual platform, then the problem comes is the emotional platform doesn't get engaged.
Mm.
And at one point or another, because the emotions are engaged even on the platform of sadhana, the emotions are engaged in the transcendental platform. So at one point, your emotions and your mind's just going to come and, you know, just stare you right straight in the face.
Mm.
And you're going to have to come to the terms of reality that I haven't dealt with my emotional nature.
Mm.
You know? And this is even faced, you know, advanced devotees.
That's a very interesting point, Maharaj, because many people almost, I mean, what could you say, run away
yeah.
from confronting, you know, their own emotional issues sometimes.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, long term, got to be unhealthy.
You can't, because the thing is the emotions are established on the platform as prescribed duty.
Hmm.
So it may be one's doing the major part of the prescribed duty, but some of the finer points.
Hmm.
Just like telling somebody they're an idiot because they can't understand what you're saying, rather than saying, try to understand.
Hmm.
It can be said with the same force. You know, because the person is being foolish. But the one engages the emotional platform because I want to help this person. And the other is, you don't really have any relationship with them.
One because that's would be of course, seen as an encouragement, the other would be seen as a discouragement.
Yes.
Somebody says you're a fool.
Yeah.
Automatically they just close up.
Yeah. Well, we're not talking about, you know, all kinds of lovey-dovey, or as Grudge Bihari calls it, you know, touchy-feely you know, all this new age kind of stuff.
Mm.
It's just sentimental, emotional. We're talking about direct, where the philosophy and the and the emotions are directly connected.
Mm.
Through the we see how it works. So we understand that by doing this, this does this. You know, we understand that. Okay, Krishna is the supreme. How do you say?
Reconciler.
That means the example I was going to give. There's like one in parental ras. Krishna is the supreme. Nityo nityanam chaitanas chaitananam. There's unlimited, there's living entities, but they're all maintained by the one. So this principle, he's giving shelter to everybody. Still running? Huh? Still is. He is maintaining. So then the parental ras has that same element. Right? So just like we respect Krishna, the child must respect the parents. And just like Krishna protects all the other living entities, the parent must protect the child. Then that emotional exchange is complete.
Hmm.
And if one doesn't do that, the parent doesn't neglect the child, or the child doesn't respect or listen to the parents, the emotional platform is not functioning because the prescribed duties are not being done. And therefore, there'll be a disturbance in the family or in the community, and in the individual. And at some point, one will have to come to terms with that. This is just straight philosophy. This is not some, you know, new age, when you were young, you know, your mother ate too many pretzels kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it means your problems today are also being carried on from today. You know, the point is because this is just one body, but we've developed a mentality. So we may say, when you were young, then this happened. So that's creating all your emotional problems now. But the reason that happened when you were young is because in your last life or previous life, you did something that already is setting that mood. You already had the wrong attitude. You already weren't properly situated in the emotional platform. Therefore, in this life, that thing happened to you and just triggered it. But just like you had the wrong pandality this last life, and it created it, if you have the correct one this life, you can get rid of it. It means the thing itself is not what created it.
Mm.
Your mentality created the situation that then reinforces it. So you change the mentality, then it goes away. I mean, you read in the scriptures so many things going on, bad things. Does it bother anybody? Bhima, right? He and, you know, all his, you know, his cousins, they're like brothers. They all grow up together, live together. Then one of them, they poison him, they tie him up with ropes, they chuck him in the river. But does it disturb him as a person? His dealings with his parents and brothers and everything? No, he's just a little wary about these other guys, not get too close and watch what they feed you. But it doesn't create some kind of psychological weirdness in him.
Hmm.
Right? But for someone else who puts so much faith in the relationship between cousin brothers, then it may just throw them off. They may be weird for lifetimes.
Hmm.
But if you don't have faith in that, you have faith in Krishna, then, okay, I'm a little careful of this now. You know? Like that. It just depends upon what you want to do. The emotional platform is a very scientific thing.
It's like also Prabhupada.
In other words, you deal with the emotional platform through the intelligence, not through the emotions. Because that's sentiment. It means philosophy with religion, that's proper. Philosophy without religion is mental speculation. So that's you get into the intellectualizing and all that. That's what I was talking about before. And the new age touchy-feely stuff, that's all sentiment with no philosophy.
Mm. And also Prabhupada, in the example you gave Prabhupada saying, just try to understand. Mm. Prabhupada's concept of that jiva is that fundamentally he's eternal servant of Krishna.
Yeah.
So there is facility some way for him understanding.
Yeah.
He's within the realm of being able to understand because of his constitutional position.
Yeah.
So Prabhupada has always seen that option. Yes. You're also eternal Supreme Krishna. You must be, on some level, able to understand. Mm. I'm holding out that positive aspect. Mm. When somebody else is, you can't understand, you're also an idiot. Mm. He's simply going on the external and negated the absolute reality of Sambandha, that jiva's relationship with the Supreme Lord as eternal soul. Mm.
Yeah, very good point. Very good point. So it's complete. When our culture means a philosophy, it's not some sentiment, oh, just we'll be get together and it'll be nice and, you know, lovey-dovey. No. Because of our philosophy and accepting that, and by the practice of it, we develop the qualities. Right? From devotional practice in the proper way, you develop the 26 qualities of the devotees. Then you're able to properly exchange with others. But that's the point, is the madhyams can exchange nicely. Kanistas always have some difficulty, because there's so much anarthas in the heart. So the anarthas are what create that we can't associate properly. Right? But even then, if you follow the prescribed duties, at least externally you can do, like you see in India. The Indians can deal nicely externally with everybody. They may not be sincere in what they're saying to somebody or their relationship, but at least externally it's nice. You know, that's the minimum platform. Just like one, even if an enemy comes to the home, they should not feel like they're an enemy. They should be a welcome guest, taken care of, and they should never feel bad. So that means it can either be done externally. You know, that's the rule and this and that, and, you know, and you do it, and they don't feel bad. Or you can understand, yes, it's just the modes of nature. This person has done this and that, and therefore he feels he's my enemy. You know, and if I was materialistic, I could also consider that he is my enemy, but I understand Krishna's in control, they're not my enemy. One can take it from that level. So at least the minimum is that take the platform of being a gentleman and follow the prescribed duties. Then, at least you have social structure. Because the emotional platform is taken care of at least on its basic platform. Just material, mundane, basic platform. You know? But since one is trying to do that for Krishna without attachment, then one is being elevated by that endeavor. Like we see Jarasandha. He is also, his enemies have come, but he takes care of them nicely. But he doesn't become elevated in devotional service, because he's not doing it favorably for Krishna, to please him without attachment to result. But the devotee is. Therefore, even though it may be external, one is trying to do it with the right attitude. One is trying to do it. This anushilanam. He is trying. Oh, no, not anushilanam. The anyavilasita. Anyavilasita and anukula. Anukulyena. He's doing it. He's endeavoring to do it favorably for Krishna without karma and jnana. He may be full of karma and jnana, but he's trying. Mm-hmm. And that's one advances. Krishna accepts that. Step by step. But one cannot become proud that where we are now, that's perfect. So it's a very, very fine point. It's this thing, we get off into other things. We want to say, what has this has to do with deity worship? But the deity worship is just an anga of the philosophy. Right? You have the philosophy, the transcendental knowledge. And then connected with that, you take the transcendental knowledge and you apply it into the material world through ritual. You know? You get the Pancharatra. You'd apply it through medicine. You get the Ayurveda. You apply that philosophy, you know, through grammar, you get Sanskrit. You apply it through logic and argument, you get Nyaya. You apply it through, you know, like that. So it all goes back to the same place. So if we can understand these central principles, factually one can understand how it all fits together. Right? That's the point. It's all connected. You know, we see, we can talk about this thing as just a technical ritual. Waking up, brushing his teeth, cleaning his tongue. We can talk about it on the topmost platform of, you know, intimate pastimes of what Krishna is doing in Golok. Right? The same thing. It's just a matter of how you see. If you understand the principle, you have that broad range in which to deal. Therefore, one can still be doing the ritual like this. It looks like Vaidhi Sadhana, but one is on the platform of Prema Bhakti. It looks like Vaidhi Sadhana, you're on the platform of Raganuga. It looks like Vaidhi Sadhana, you're on the platform of Bhava. It looks like Vaidhi, you've attained pure unalloyed devotional service. But people still see you there with your Achman cup, pick up a spoon and go, Idam Achmaniyam, Esha Dantakashtam, like that. One will still see like that. But what is your understanding and realization of that? That's another thing. That is seen by how you deal with devotees, your understanding of the philosophy, your service attitude, your like that. Your respect for others, respect for authority, service attitude. That'll be seen. Then you can understand what are the levels. Like that. Just maybe we should end here. We're only 1 hour over time. Well, that's because when there's everyone has a nice interest and it creates a nice mood, and you can discuss very nicely with that. So everybody gets benefited. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sanatan Goswami Pada ki jai. Rupa Goswami Pada ki jai. Jai Nitya Guru Premanand.
Jai.
Jai Nitya Guru Premanand.
Jai.